You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I hate bachelor and bachelorette parties. That's not new. That's not news. Anytime bachelor and bachelorette parties come up in the context of a question here on the Savage Lovecast, I go off on how much I hate them because of what they symbolize. And what they symbolize is marriage is the end of fun. You're about to get married, so this is your last chance to get a lap dance, to go out and get drunk with your friends, and you gotta really go for it. This is the last night of your life, the last night of freedom. And I hate that. I hate the message that sends because marriage should be an adventure. Marriage should be the fun that you're having now with this person. You should still be able to, I don't know, both of you go out and get a lap dance together every once in a while. If you convince people that marriage is the end of fun and adventure, then people who long for fun and adventure, and people do, people want variety, people want new experiences, people want lap dances. If you convince them that the only way they can have that is to get not married anymore, they will engineer the ends of their marriages. This is all just my way of letting you know that there's no intro, really, for the top of this week's show. No commentary on current political events because I am off having an adventure with my husband. It is possible for you to do that thing, to be married almost a quarter of a century. Terry and I have been together almost 25 years and still go out in the world as a couple and have an adventure together. Terry and I right now are in a major European capital wearing shockingly inappropriate outfits for men of our age and social stature and having fun, having an adventure as a married couple. It is a thing that we do, and we do semi-regularly. It's one of the reasons I think that we are still together and still in love, because when I look at him, I don't see the death and the end of possibility and adventures and lap dances. I see the person that I have adventures with and sometimes get lap dances beside. So if you are married, if you are coupled, if you are partnered, go have an adventure. That's what Terry and I are doing this week. It's why I'm not doing an intro at the top of this week's show about the latest outrages inflicted upon our democracy by the cacistocracy that's currently in control. So in preparation for you having an adventure with your partner, maybe listen to this week's show. Get some ideas about the possible kinds of adventures that you two could have together. And on this week's show, tons of your Q, lots of my A. And in the Magnum subscription, Savage Lovecast, that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, comedian Amy Miller is here to tackle a few questions. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Save $50 toward a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code savagelove. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers all fresh, high-quality ingredients and recipes you need to create delicious home-cooked meals. Get your first three meals for free by going to blueapron.com/savage. Today's episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. And right now you can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, click the mic. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 37-year-old cisgendered bisexual female partnered with a man in marriage, and I teach writing on the West Coast. I'm calling because I had a student in my writing class last year who sexually harassed me. What happened is he began making objectifying comments about my appearance, starting with hair, oh, your hair's up, oh, your hair's down, and then the way my clothes fit. And it escalated over a period of 2 or 3 weeks into an incident that happened as we were both getting ready to go into the restroom, a single restroom. And this gentleman who is my father's age, he's 65, he is actually a gay man. As I was getting ready to go into the bathroom, I said, oh, please go in front of me. And he said, no, no, you go first and I'll lick the toilet seat after you use it. As in every time this happens to me, including once in a TSA checkpoint, I didn't believe my ears at first. And I even came home that evening and asked my husband if maybe this was a Southernism. And my husband assured me it's not. Of course, I knew exactly what he had said. And his graphic description of oral contact with my genitals, I thought rose to the level of harassment. What I'm calling about is I wanted to check my analysis of this situation with you. And I was curious if there are any other dialogues going on in the culture about this, which is that sexual harassment isn't about sexual harassment, but really about power. And I'm just in a situation where I was actually sexually harassed by a much older gay gentleman. And I do think it was about power. I think it was about this student of mine feeling uncomfortable with my intellectual authority and making objectifying comments about my body that then escalated into graphic descriptions as a way of undermining my power, my intellectual power, by bringing attention to making me his sexual subordinate. So I'm just curious if you agree with that analysis and if there are any other dialogues about this going on in the culture. Thank you so much, Dan.
Yes, sexual harassment is or can be or most often is about power, what people think they can get away with. But the charitable read here with this quote-unquote gay gentleman, not something I would have called him after an experience like this, but you so labeled him. Maybe you're being sarcastic. The charitable read here is senility, 65 years old. Some people at 65 are kind of losing touch and getting a little senile, and that can often include, with senility, disinhibiting. People making comments that they would not have made if they were fully, people making sexual comments that they wouldn't have made if they were in full control of their faculties. Perhaps he's not in full control of his faculties anymore. Or perhaps he's one of those gay guys, and they're out there, who assumes wrongly that because he's gay and he's not interested in you sexually in any way, and you're a straight woman and you're not interested in him sexually in any way, that anything goes in that relationship, that any comment that he might make is just playful horseshittery and certainly not something you're going to feel threatened by because he would never want to have sex with you. So it's just naughty talk. It's just dirty banter and meaningless and harmless. You need to let him know that it ain't harmless and it ain't meaningless and it made you feel threatened and it ain't okay. And not to be ageist, you could look at him and say, have you been to the doctor lately? Because this is the sort of thing, these are the sorts of comments that sometimes people start making late in life when they are losing their grip. And that is the charitable read here. If you're uncomfortable having him in your class, though, get him booted the fuck out of your class. Somebody who's following you to bathrooms and then making comments like that before you head into a single-seater is no one that you want following you to a single-seater bathroom with a lock on the door. Gay, identified, or not, you have some power in this situation. You have some institutional authority. You have the ability to boot this motherfucker from your class. Maybe that'll open his eyes to the inappropriateness of these kinds of comments, if indeed he's been engaged in this kind of quote-unquote harmless banter all his life. Or maybe it will inspire him to go see a fucking doctor, if indeed there's some underlying medical issue at play here. But you don't have to take this from him or anyone. Go to whoever it is that runs the college level writing program, wherever it is that you work, speak to the person above you about removing this person from your class. You have an absolute right to do that. You ought to do that. There should be consequences for him. And you should feel safe in your classroom and be safe from this kind of harassment. Use the power that you have in this circumstance. You don't want to be looking over your shoulder to see if this creep is following you to the bathroom again, ever.
Hi, Dan. I'm a female in my early 20s, straight, and I recently broke up with someone who I'd been dating for about eight months, and there were some like emotional incompatibilities that I didn't really feel like made it worth continuing, but more than that, my ex-boyfriend had a very specific fetish that I just didn't really want to do anymore, and I knew from the time we'd been together that it was a really big deal for him, and that it's honestly, it was one of the only things that made him, like, completely erect. And so, like, it was we had to do it in order to even have enjoyable sex for me. And it was basically like human trafficking, like more than just kidnapping and gags and bondage, which can be really fun. But it was, you know, it's really one of the only things that he wanted to do. And after we broke up, I let him know that I didn't really want to do that as much as he wanted to. And he chose to be very upset and damaged by that. And I don't want to feel like I shamed him. I just wanted to make it clear that, like, I didn't want to do that anymore. So I feel very weird that I've now maybe shamed someone into thinking that they have a problem. And that's not what I meant. I just meant that it wasn't compatible with me, which I think is a very reasonable thing to consider in a relationship. Anyway, but my question is, like, do I have any responsibility to, like, help this person feel less shamed? Or do I just sort of need to let him go since we're not together and hope that he heals from it with someone who also wants to do that?
He had a very specific and elaborate fantasy scenario kink with bondage elements. And you went there. You were completely good giving in game, and you gave it a go and realized in the end that this wasn't for you. And so a long-term relationship with him wasn't in the cards, particularly if he's so dependent on acting out this fantasy that he can't get an erection in any other way. And this wasn't something that you were willing to do every single time or able to do, nor was it reasonable of him to expect you to do every single time you had sex with him for the next 5 or 6 decades. Yeah, you guys weren't a match. You weren't sexually compatible, and you have a right to prioritize basic bedrock sexual compatibility when you're picking a romantic and sexually exclusive partner. So you're absolutely right to end the relationship, and within your rights to cite this as a reason that you two weren't good for each other. Now, his reaction that he feels shamed by you, do you have a responsibility to help him process that? Maybe if you like him on the way out the door, that could just be a retaliatory, sulky reaction on his part, or he could genuinely feel guilty to find out from someone that for the last 8 months they've been having sex with you that squicked them out and they didn't enjoy because they were giving it a go. That can leave you feeling a little bit awful about your desires, about yourself, because you were doing this thing with them that they weren't enjoying, but they were giving it a go and they seemed to be enjoying it. And then you find out later they really weren't. That can leave you feeling shitty about your kinks. And you can tell him that there were some parts that you enjoyed, you just couldn't do only that forever. That's what was the tripwire for you that made you have to end this relationship, was that he was so dependent on it. And the more you played in this space, the more you explored this scenario with him, the less appealing it became over time. That doesn't mean you never enjoyed yourself at all. It just means you weren't the right one for him. And you can say all that to him, and he may still spin this up into, I have been horribly kink-shamed, because he wants to be the victim here of his sex trafficking fantasies somehow. And you can't help that. You can't prevent him from spinning this up into he was wronged. And the relationship is over. There's only so much you owe him. Gave him an explanation about why the relationship had to end. And you can, although you're not obligated, to give him an explanation now that lets him off the kink shame hook. But it doesn't sound to me like you put him on the kink shame hook. It sounds like he put himself on the kink shame hook. And you can say that to him too. Nothing to be ashamed about so long as you're doing these things with consenting adults who get off on them too. I thought I might have been that consenting adult. I gave it a go. I tried. Didn't work for me long term. So I'm out. Go find somebody that this works for long term. Someone whose arousal is as dependent on this fantasy as yours is. Find that person. They're the match. I'm not the match. That doesn't make anything shamey about your kink or this scenario. You have nothing to be ashamed of, so stop it. And I have nothing to be ashamed of. Sometimes people claim that they're being kink-shamed to reverse double backflip kink-shame the person kink-shaming them. Sometimes people claim that they're being kink-shamed in a reverse double backflip effort to kink-shame-shame the person who isn't actually kink-shaming them. And that may be his game here. It's a complicated one. Good luck anyone out there who tries to diagram that last sentence. I salute you. But the relationship is over. And there's only so much you owe him. And helping him crawl off the kink hook shame he put himself on, that is above and beyond. That is extra credit. That is not something that you owe him. But you can, if you want, give that to him. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing those savings directly on to you. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. It's made of supportive memory foam for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. And Casper mattresses are made in the USA. Terry and I, me and my husband, we sleep on a Casper mattress every night, and we just ordered a second one for our guest room, so we are genuine fans. Casper mattresses come delivered to your door in a compact box, and it's kind of magical to open it. It's like a genie mattress unfolding. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery in the U.S., Canada, and now in the U.K., and painless returns within a 100-day period, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. You can save an additional $50 toward a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code savagelove. That's casper.com/savagelove and promo code savagelove. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, Dan. I have a situation that I recently discovered that has totally unnerved me. To give you a little background, I'm 48, my boyfriend's 49, and we've been together just over a year and a half, living together for the past year. Things have been great between us. I consider this probably one of the best relationships I've ever had. We're both GGG. I was curious about pegging, which he enthusiastically agreed to, and he was into waterworks, which I agreed to. On our computer, we have a separate sign-on for us to download porn and images that are just for us. We both access this occasionally, and this past weekend, he was out of town for a couple of days, and so I got on the site, and we've had some computer crashing issues, and so he's had to restore the computer a couple of times. Well, apparently this last time that he did that, it went back to a former version that I've never seen before. And so I found photographs that he had taken of himself where he was posed, that he inserted into memes that he had made of himself and his ex-wife and his ex-girlfriend where they're bathed in or eating shit. He also downloaded lots of pictures of women bathed in shit, people shitting, just our own shit. He added paragraphs about how our slut wives love to eat our shit and about how he and his ex were your perverted satanic friends. There's also memes where he's talking to this, like, Leave It to Beaver looking family about how religion's bad and that shit eating and fucking are great. There were hundreds of these. The photos stop a couple months after we started dating, and I've never seen this side of him or heard him mention this. But he spent a tremendous amount of time and effort and energy to make all of these. And so I have to believe that it's something he may want to do eventually. I know myself, and there's no way in hell that I will ever practice this. So my question and my dilemma is this something that could have possibly been a phase? Or is there a chance that he could spring this on me in the future? We do have plans of getting married in a couple of years. And like I said, our relationship has been great. We've discussed being monogamous because we both stated that's kind of what we practice, and we haven't ever felt the need to step outside because we're open to each other's desires. But this is a line I know I will never cross. I don't want to lose him, but I'm worried that I may not be the right woman for him after all, if this is something that he's into. So if you have any advice that you can give me, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, no one is really shit curious. Nobody's like, shit, I don't know, maybe. And let's give that a try and make thousands of images and take lots of pictures of ourselves bathed in and eating each other's shit. People who get into shit tend to be shit certain. They know that that's what they want. They know that that's their thing. And the internet exists to bring these people together. The internet exists in part, thank you, Al Gore, to skim the shit people off the top of the dating pond. You know, it used to be that people with really extreme fetishes, people who are into shit, people who are into extreme S&M, people who are into necrophilia, kind of had to spring that on unwitting partners or be with people that they never fully revealed themselves to sexually and seek those experiences outside the relationship because they could never risk the reveal because there are some kinks that are, to borrow Pretty Emeritus, Emily Yoffe's phrase, libido killers. Just knowing that your partner is into this can be a libido killer for the person who doesn't share the kink. And shit, for a lot of people, is that kind of libido killing kink, even if they're not asking you to act upon it, knowing that somebody is into that. And that's a stigma, and perhaps that's sex shamey and kink shamey. On the flip side, though, what arouses someone with this kind of kink is the massive transgression it represents, the feelings of revulsion that it elicits in most people who don't share this kink, don't share this fetish. So you can't have the arousal that is grounded in the transgressiveness and the revulsion most will experience and then not have a little bit of the kink shame or the stigma or the libido killing effect on others who don't share your kink. Those things are welded together. So your boyfriend and potential future husband's interest in shit, a phase, unlikely, particularly if you found hundreds or thousands of images featuring him and his exes engaged in this sort of behavior. Something he may spring on you later? Yeah, maybe. So this shared computer where you found these images, you didn't hack it. You say it's a shared computer where you stumbled over these images. I think you have a right to ask him about what you've discovered. You can't unknow what you now know. And this is a conversation, a really difficult conversation that you are going to have with him, and a conversation you're going to have in a mirror with yourself. You need to tell him. You need to ask him, is this something that you're hoping that a year or two down the line I might get into? And what up with all of these images? And tell him that this is something you will never be into, that this is someplace you can never go. And if he can't be happy with someone who is never going to make satanic shit porn with him ever, that you're not the right partner for him. And then the conversation you need to have in the mirror is a conversation about whether, knowing that this is a fetish of his, knowing that this is a kink that he's enjoyed in the past and given his druthers might want to enjoy with you or enjoy in the future with someone else, is that a libido killer for you? Is that something that will preoccupy you when you're having sex with him, wondering if that's tape is spooling through his mind? Or is it something you can suspend your disbelief about and just set aside and say, I'm not going to think about the fact that you're into this, and you can successfully then not think about it ever again? And if the answer is no, that this is going to be a constant existential torment to you, whether or not he ever asks you to engage in this behavior with him, then your partner of the last year and change might not be somebody that you can be with for the rest of your life. And if this is something that he can't live without, then you might not be the right partner for him either. And God bless the internet. That exists in part to bring the poop lovers together. It used to be hard for the poop lovers to find each other. Now poop lovers are a squicky Google search away. Tough situation to be in. My heart goes out to you. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. They make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, even people like me who aren't that handy in the kitchen or didn't used to be. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients so you can make delicious home-cooked meals. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you will never get bored. Customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options, so you can choose what fits your needs. And there is no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Here are a couple of items on the menu coming up. Fennel-spiced steaks with garlic roasted potato and green bean salad, and skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so do not wait. We are talking free food here, free meals. That's blueapron.com/savage for those first three meals for free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old, and my question concerning my 20-year-old brother. Basically, 2 days before Thanksgiving last year, my mom kind of coerced my brother into coming out to her. And I say coerced because if she has an inkling of anything that you're keeping from her, she will force you to tell her. So after she kind of explained that he begrudgingly confessed that he was gay, he told her that he would prefer that she not tell anyone, especially my dad, and, you know, kind of keep it between the two of them. So, of course, my mom immediately tells my dad, and then 2 days later on Thanksgiving tells me. And, you know, none of us could care less. We love him. You know, it doesn't matter to me at all that he's gay. But the problem is that since her revelation to us, she has continued to tell every single member of our family, my sister, her aunt, her sisters, strangers, like she will literally tell anybody, but she has made us all promise that we won't approach my brother and let him know that we know, because then she will quote unquote get in trouble that she confessed this to us without his consent. But now it's August. It's been 9 months since we've been told. I've kind of strategically put myself alone with my brother on occasion, just trying to, you know, see if maybe he'll open up to me, and nothing. So at this point, I'm wondering, Dan, is it better for me to just come out with it and say, I know, it doesn't matter, I love you, you know, and kind of get on with our lives? Or do I owe it to my mom and my brother to keep his secret and allow him to come to me when he's ready? Like, what would you have wanted from your sister?
If mom's going to out your brother, which is essentially what she's done to you, to dad, to strangers on the street, to distant relatives, I don't see why you shouldn't out mom to your brother. Mom's outed your brother to scores of people. You're outing mom to just one person. You know what you know. Your brother needs to know what you know. And I think your brother needs to know how you found out, so that in the future, if there's something that he doesn't want broadcast to the whole world, that he tells mom about it last. Mom has essentially constructed a closet for all of you. You're all in the closet about knowing your brother is himself in a little bit of a closet. And at a certain point, it's all going to come tumbling out. He's going to find out sooner or later. And then there's going to be a lot of time wasted. There's already been time wasted where he could have been receiving from you and others in the family your love and support. And instead, he's on the receiving end of silence, and he believes that his secret is still a secret. And if mom has a reputation for not being able to keep a secret, perhaps your brother wanted it to play out this way. Perhaps your brother told mom this so that she would tell everyone and he wouldn't have to tell them himself. And now he feels as if he is out or doesn't need to be addressed, or he's waiting for one of you to say something. So yeah, go ahead and say something. You know what you know, and your brother needs to know how you found it out. Going to the post office can be such a drag. Lines are long. It's always out of the way. And if your post office where you live is anything like my post office where I live, it doesn't smell very good in there. Thankfully, you can avoid the hassle and stank of the post office and instead mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international, with Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and your own printer. Simply click print mail and you are done. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes and smells nice. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. Plus, they'll send you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage and help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. You can even get discounts you cannot get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com, enter Savage. Stamps.com, never, ever go to the post office again.
Hi, Dan, and the Tech Savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 24-year-old cis straight girl in Washington, D.C. I've recently ended my second relationship in a row with someone who is generous, steadfast, intelligent, and cute, and someone who really loved me deeply. The first guy lasted a year and a half, although perhaps 8 months in, I had lost my feelings and attraction for him. We eventually stopped having sex altogether, and I couldn't bring myself to end things because he hadn't done anything quote-unquote wrong. But when I booked a job on the road for 6 months, I was able to dump him. But right before I left for that work trip, I met another wonderful man, and we stayed together through my travels, through him moving to my city, and until now, only 7 months later. I just ended things because despite him also being the most giving partner imaginable, he didn't excite me. So this pattern begs the question, can I be happy with the kind of person that I wish to be happy with, someone who's mature and communicative and sweet? I'm genuinely worried that I've thrown away too many awesome people in the name of some mythical man or in the name of some passionate, hypothetical feelings. I know that people do fall in love in a grandiose way, that people enjoy and laugh and fuck to no end with their partners, and I want that in addition to the tender communication that my ex is offered. What do I do with the potential realization that I don't go for the nice guy, so to speak? I know I'm young and I have many more experiences ahead of me, but I guess I just want to know if there's something that I can work on personally as I move forward. It also stands to note that my tendency is to have a new guy queued up when I break up with someone, although that is not the case this time.
There are people out there who aren't cut out for, don't want, but are convinced they should want and try then to have long-term relationships. There are people out there who sexual romantic interest is temporary and not something that they can sustain over the long haul, and they lose interest in someone once they've landed them. Maybe you're one of those people, or maybe these guys who were nice on paper and perfect for you on paper in all of these ways weren't really the guys who were perfect for you. Maybe you haven't met the guy who's perfect for you. Maybe you're picking guys to date and looking at them and saying they're perfect for all of these reasons, but they're not your reasons. They're reasons that were pounded into your head by family or church or the culture. They're the guys that you are convinced you're supposed to want, but not actually the guys you do want. And perhaps you need to break out of the pattern and date different types of guys. Date guys and fuck guys who aren't the guys who meet all of these perhaps arbitrary, perhaps not your criteria, and see if one of them doesn't click and click long term and sustain your sexual interest over time. But if you do that, if you date more broadly, if you open up your heart and your legs to different types of guys, and this pattern sustains itself over time, well, then you're a short-term relationship type. And that's not a terrible thing to be, so long as you're not misrepresenting to yourself, so long as you're not lying to guys about there being any long, multi-decade term prospects with you. You can date other guys who are similarly sexually and romantically situated. There are lots of people out there who don't want LTRs. Not all of them know it. So you see people getting into committed LTRs and having to blow them up, having to force the person to dump them, or dumping that person, making commitments that they shouldn't have made over and over and over again because they never learn to accept or learn to recognize who they are romantically and sexually. But I think it is too soon to put that label on yourself. And it's not a dinged can damaged label. It's just as valid as somebody who's up for and seeking and able to make a long-term commitment and sustain sexual romantic interest in someone over the decades. It's only a problem when people don't know themselves and aren't honest with themselves about who they are and what they want, and then wind up hurting people, person after person after person after person, because they are convinced that they should want and therefore are going to continue to make serious commitments, long-term commitments, when they're incapable of honoring or keeping them. And because they're not actually what they want, but they won't admit that to themselves because a good person wants a long-term relationship. And I want to be a good person. So I'm going to keep striving for this thing that I keep proving to myself and others over and over and over again that I am bad at. But like I said, too soon to put that label on yourself. Break out of this pattern. You talk about these two guys and they sound very similar, these guys, and they meet these standards, your criteria. I would challenge you on whether the criteria you are employing right now is your criteria or your mom's criteria or Cosmo's criteria or Vogue's criteria or the media's criteria or your church's criteria and not actually yours. Who are the guys you masturbate about? What unspools in your head when you masturbate? Are they these guys or is it a totally different type of guy? Things to think about. Good luck.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old straight female, and I've been in a monogamous relationship with my boyfriend for 2 years now. We recently moved in together, and things are going pretty well, except for my boyfriend's attachment to his ex-girlfriend. They're still friends, which in general I think is fine, but it seems like there's something more there, and it makes me feel pretty insecure. They had a really up-and-down, tumultuous relationship compared to our pretty even-keel one, and she hasn't dated anybody since him. He's still close to her family and is always going to her brother's comedy shows, and her mom sends him gardening tips and books and things like that. They also know I exist, and I attend a lot of these outings as well, and I'm always very friendly whenever we're around his ex or her family. But a couple weeks ago, my insecurity got the best of me, and I looked through his text thread with her, and I know your feelings about that. but I did do it. And though I didn't find anything super incriminating, their conversations are a little too intimate and flirty for what I would have liked between him and his ex. She lives right near where he rides bikes on Thursdays, and they have a running joke that he uses her place as a locker room, and he showers there and leaves clothes there so he can go there after his bike rides, which I didn't know about. On some days when he'd kiss me goodbye to go on a run in the morning, he'd run to the farmer's market where she works so they could get breakfast together. She also sent him a lot of pictures of scenery on her bike rides, which is a pastime they share together that I don't. And there's just a lot of flirty conversations back and forth almost on a daily basis. I know he's not sleeping with her, and he's explained their friendship to me over and over, but I still just can't seem to shake the bad feeling I have around it. It also bothers me that he knows it bothers me and still doesn't tone it down. If they really are just friends, then what is he doing? Does he just like the attention? Is he keeping her on some sort of back burner? Is it just my insecurity speaking? I know I'm never going to date anyone that doesn't have a past, and he has a right to have private, independent relationships with his friends. In fact, I think that's key to a healthy relationship. But why does it have to be with his super cool ex-girlfriend? Am I being overly insecure here, or is this behavior objectively weird?
Joining me in the studio to help tackle this question, someone who knows something about comedy shows, Amy Miller, comedian. You've seen her on Last Comic Standing, Viceland, voted 3 years in a row, two years in a row,
mm-hmm.
Portland's funniest comedian and a regular panelist on some podcast called Doug Loves Movies.
It's a big podcast, Dan.
Well, I can't keep track of all the big podcasts. There's so many big podcasts. I'm a big podcast.
I know. I'm so excited to be here.
And you're a big podcast, too.
Yeah, getting there.
You have Who's Your God?
It's yes.
Your podcast about religion.
It's all about religion. We talk to comedians about their spiritual beliefs.
Oh my God.
Yes. A godless group of people.
Okay.
Much so, like this gentleman, apparently.
Okay. So you're here because you're an expert on relationships and love. No, you're here because you're funny and I wanted to talk to you. And sometimes I like to emphasize that like advice is just something anybody can do. You don't have to be like an expert in a particular field to like, you don't need to put any qualifications. People always ask me like, what are your qualifications to give advice? I'm like, somebody asked.
Well, and it's necessary to think about relationships and love to do comedy, I think. I mean, I talk about it on stage, so I have to be somewhat thoughtful and observant.
You have to be conversant.
Yes.
So this woman's boyfriend is fucking his ex.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's not.
No, you don't think so?
No, I think they're friends.
Showering friends?
I mean, I might project.
Storing clothes at her apartment friends?
That part is weird. I think that the showering and the clothing is definitely a boundary crossing. But she only knows about it because she read his text. So it sounds like they have some deep other trust issues.
Well, I always say that digging into someone's texts or, you know, reading their emails is always wrong unless you find something that retroactively makes it right. Like if you know, there are people who I read your text and I found out that you're having, you know, unsafe sex with 1,000 people and not telling me about
right,
it. And you
right.
drained our bank account seeing sex work. Like sometimes you find something out
yes,
that legitimizes the snooping retroactively
sure.
that you needed to know.
Yes.
And this,
but don't you think people have the intuition before they read the text that something is off and they have a right, distrust of this person anyway?
Right. But sometimes that person is successfully gaslighting them and
yes.
telling them that they're crazy.
Sure.
And you need to find the evidence that you aren't crazy.
Yes.
They are fucking your ex or draining your bank account or having unsafe sex with with a cast of thousands
right.
and putting you at risk. So it's odd that the caller, who's apparently a listener to the show, would have to be because people would call me randomly. I don't mm-hmm. steal other people's questions from other advice shows, that she's listened. And we've covered this a million times. Like, it's always wrong unless you find something and then it's right.
But she hasn't really found anything. I mean, the showering is weird.
She's found out that he is showering. Now, you see, maybe it's innocent. Maybe because he's sweaty and it's near the place where he bikes. I guess he's biking in a velodrome, not just biking around town. It's near
right.
the place that he bikes or near the place that he works. And you see innocent like showering off and storing clothes and this
yeah.
kind of intimacy. And I see destroying evidence.
I
see him showering
interesting.
The other woman's pussy stank off his dick before he goes home to his girlfriend.
Well, let's give the other lady a little bit of credit because maybe she's not even interested in fucking her ex anymore. I take this a little personally because I'm friends with all my exes, Dan.
I'm friends with my exes, too. I think it's always a great sign when someone's a friend with their ex.
I love my exes.
But there's friends with your ex and they're showering with your ex.
That is weird. And that's not something that I would do without telling my boyfriend. I just wouldn't do it. I respect that relationship. But I bet if he dug into my texts with some of my exes, they could be construed as flirty.
Mm-hmm.
That's just we're close friends and we love each other. And those are valuable relationships to me.
And sometimes, you know, flirting with exes, it's not so much about flirting. It's about being nostalgic for the relationship you used to have.
Yeah, it's familiarity. Yeah.
And sometimes people misinterpret convos that they uncover with exes as flirty or incriminating when they're actually just wistful or nostalgic. An acknowledgement of what you used to mean to each other, and sometimes a playful invocation of the sex that you had, the intimacy that you once shared.
Yeah, and that's a way that you're used to communicating already. So it's a really natural progression.
But if they're sending each other pictures of their assholes, there's a problem.
Well, that's not what's happening here. She didn't find an asshole picture.
Well, I'm just saying generally. We're not in the specifics of her problem.
Right, like, right.
If you dig into your boyfriend's phone and he's sending pictures of his asshole to people, there might be...
It's a huge problem.
And I just need to look into his asshole.
Yeah, I'm extremely loyal. So I never cross any of those boundaries with my ex, and I make sure to talk about him a lot, which they love.
You only send pictures of your asshole to the guy you're seeing.
They already have old pictures of my asshole. They can look at it younger and thinner. He's stuck with the current version. Okay, so the only weird part is the showering. Is that...
And the inconsideration? Is that a problem?
Yes, it is.
This is a fine thing. This is going to require some unpacking, though, because I'm always coming down on people who are angry that their currents are friends with their exes. Because I think you're a potential future ex, too.
Yeah.
And somebody who's shitty to all of their exes. And you're very likely going to be a future ex, because almost all relationships fail until one doesn't. People have a lot more former partners than current partners, typically.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody is on good terms with their exes, I think, is proving that they're a good person. They're someone that people want in their lives still, even if the romantic relationship ends, and they're capable of having that kind of connection.
Yeah. And if you're in a new relationship and you have an ex you've been friends with 10, 15 years, I mean, in some ways, that's more important thing to nurture, because you don't know where this new thing is going.
And someone who you've been dating for 2 months who demands that you cut things off with someone who's been a presence in your life for 15 years that maybe you were with for 2 years romantically, you're likelier to get rid of the 2-monther than the 15-year-er.
I would hope so. Or you're making weird decisions.
Yeah, you are making weird decisions. But people make these kind of demands all the time. So I am pro friends with exes. But there's got to be a point at which you need to demonstrate to your current that you're not doing things that would alarm them unnecessarily if nothing's going on. And I'm sorry, showering at your ex's house.
Totally agree.
Kind of alarming.
Yeah. If he's doing it, he should have talked to her about it for sure.
He's not having lunch with his ex. He's not hanging out with his ex. He's not seeing her at comedy shows where they see other friends. He's naked in his ex's apartment and wet.
Well, rule number one is don't date a comedian because they're horrible people, the male ones. And
just
I think
the male ones.
This is not a surprise to me. I'm not saying that he's necessarily cheating, but it is a job that attracts some shady men a lot of the time.
But
disloyal
only good,
men.
Only good women.
I think so, yeah. Well, we have to be, well, not 100%, but we have to be like fairly strong to put up with most of this shit. And like us, like self-actualized and realized people by the time we start it. Otherwise, we'll get eaten alive.
Comedy, there's so many prominent female comedians. But comedy, when you hear, you talk to people, you speak to comedians, it remains a tough world for women to break into, at least initially, doesn't it?
Yes. It's very hard. It sucks. But this is an interesting dynamic, because I think that we are a little bit less of dirtbags, because a lot of male comedians, when they start, that's the first time they're really getting proposition for sex all the time. Because they're on stage and all of a sudden they're like, oh, people want to fuck me. People never wanted to fuck me. Teenagehood. Yeah, college, nothing. And now I started comedy. But, you know, women start comedy and we're like, oh, yeah, people have always wanted to fuck me. This is not new.
So men who go into comedy who meet with some success, you know, you see somebody on stage and they're charismatic and they're hilarious. And even if they're not your physical type, you will be attracted to them. So men who've never experienced that before, they may go a little crazy once they have it.
Yes. And they can be fairly disloyal. And I don't know if that's what's happening here, but.
But there's never a shortage of dick for women. So women who go into comedy aren't like, oh, my God, dick suddenly.
There's too many a lot of the time.
You're going to bat the dicks away.
Yeah.
All right, circling back to this person's problem, what would you advise her to do? Like practical advice. We've analyzed what it might mean, the evidence that she found when she was doing that terrible, awful, never right snooping except when it is right retroactively, because she found something that justified the snooping. What would you advise her to do with her boyfriend? What should she say to him?
It's so hard because I do think she did the wrong thing, and she didn't find like concrete evidence of cheating. So it's hard to go to him with that without breaking a lot of trust, because now he's going to just be weird with her forever.
But it's hard for someone to not know what they know. And she now knows these things that he's actively keeping from her, mm-hmm. so as not to arouse her suspicions.
What I would say, I mean, I do get pretty jealous. If I have a boyfriend who's seeming to be like secretive about his relationship with an ex, if it's all out there, like, it's totally fine. But I might say, like, you know what? I'm embarrassed to even say this, but I feel jealous and I can't change it. This is how I feel. I want to trust you. You know, have you been hanging out with her? Have you seen her lately? If he says no and you have the evidence that that's not true, then I don't know.
But sometimes people lie to a partner because their partner's not rational on a certain subject. So they protect themselves and they protect their partner from unnecessary panic or
absolutely
trauma or drama in the relationship by withholding a little bit. I don't think you have to necessarily answer every question honestly. Because a relationship ain't a deposition. And if you answer every question honestly in a relationship, that relationship's not going to survive.
Yeah. So that's true.
That someone withheld something isn't always evidence of something else going on. What might be going on is that person is controlling for your crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he has to do a lot of controlling for her crazy, then it sounds like it might not be working anyway.
If she's crazy. We're not saying you're crazy, caller.
No, we're not saying that you're crazy at all.
We're on to hypothetical people and examples and not necessarily.
Yes. You. But if that were hypothetically the situation where she asks him and he says, no, I haven't hung out with her. I haven't seen her at all. And he's been going to her house to shower. Then
he's been going to her house to take all of his clothes off and get wet.
Then either he's hiding something or he is, you know, doing some damage control, which I think is a sign of a greater issue.
It would be interesting to get him on the phone because I'm not saying this is the case, caller, but, you know, some people always minimize their own shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she might be like, I'm fine with this relationship. I don't have a problem with it. Like, why is he withholding this? So we get him on the phone and he's like, every time her name comes up,
yep.
She doesn't speak for 2 hours. She locks herself in the bathroom and cries. We have these explosive fights. Like, mm-hmm. she could be omitting a lot of context that might speak to why he minimizes or has hidden this stuff. But if you're not doing that, caller, if you are sort of open to this relationship and open to your current boyfriend being friends with his exes and he's doing all this shit,
mm-hmm.
you know what you know, you're gonna have to talk to him about it.
That's well, is your advice that she tells him she read the text?
Yeah.
Also, don't date comedians. This is the book.
was the boyfriend a comedian? I thought
they were friends
with comedians.
Here's the thing.
Don't date people who are friends with comedians. Don't date people who have comedians on their podcast.
I thought the boyfriend was a comedian, but I might have heard that wrong.
It was so long ago that we listened to the call.
Come to our
shows,
for sure.
Come to our shows. Just don't touch us with your genitals.
If he's going to a lot of comedy shows and he's not a comedian yet, he probably wants to be one, and that's the worst kind of dude.
How old are you?
36.
And how long have you been doing comedy?
6 years.
How did you get into comedy at 30? What persuaded you?
Had a little bit of an emotional breakdown.
And they figured out how to monetize that.
Exactly.
Having your emotional breakdown into a microphone on a stage in front of a bunch of strangers.
Yeah. A couple. I had a really, really hard year, like the hardest year of my life. And then, which I think, you know, Saturn returns. A lot of people have a similar experience. 28, 29. And then I was really, had really bad stage fright that I wanted to conquer. So I just dove right in and fixed all of it. Not that it's all fixed.
Well,
you know, I channel it.
You're great and you're hilarious.
Thanks.
And it was really fun to have you. I hope you'll come back.
I would love to.
It was fun to bat these questions around with you. Amy Miller, go to amymillercomedy.com to see some of her videos and to check out your upcoming tour dates. And follow Amy Miller on Twitter @AmyMiller. She is hilarious. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Amy Miller was able to stick around for a couple more questions. You will find those on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast. Go to savagelovecast.com to subscribe, support the Lovecast, and get some more Amy Miller.
This message is for episode 567. I had to stop the podcast so I could leave this message. I hope that it gets to this girl that was giggling really hard about being 20 and having affairs with someone with a great penis. As someone on the receiving end of being madly in love with someone for 2.5 years and it not being reciprocated, I just recently had like my heart ripped out of my chest and was told that he was basically just kind of using me the whole time because I was a good lay. So I don't think that that is a good thing to do. And it's really hard for me to not want to insult this person because she kind of sounds evil and just kind of laughs a lot. But maybe that's just a sign of her age. Don't do that to a person. It's really, really cruel.
Hi, this is a response to a question someone had about whether or not they should have kids right away with their partner when they feel it's not really the right time for them. I'm here to tell you that you should never have kids just because your partner wants to have kids. You should always think about having kids as something that you are going to potentially have to do on your own. So you really need to want to have kids, not just as a romantic gesture.
Hello, I have a comment on episode 567. I'm a 46-year-old straight woman, and I am sick to death of all the whiny babies I hear who spend so much time obsessing about their own lives. They are so focused on their own selfish pleasure 24 hours a day that they don't even know how to live life. Guess what? Life buffets you around. You can't and you shouldn't expect every waking moment to be served up just for you. First, there was the woman who wanted to know if it was ethical to keep fucking the guy that was in love with her, even though she was only interested in him physically. For crying out loud, girl, of course it's not ethical. Take a second and think about someone besides yourself. Then there was the idiot who was in love with a woman and that wants to have kids with him, but he couldn't move up his kid timeline by a few years. What in the world are you clinging to? Do you think having children is a death sentence or something? Do you absolutely need to have that one more night out with the guys in your early 30s and there's just no way that you can't have that experience? It's ridiculous. Life is a continuum, and there are phases that you'll go through in your life. Each one of them has its own set of pleasures and difficulties. Some of us have a long young adult phase. Others don't. But just because you're 40 or you have kids doesn't mean you can't do young adult things. Just get a goddamn babysitter. Maybe you can't drop everything at a moment's notice, but big deal. Why does it have to be about you all the time? What exactly is it that you're going to do in the next 2 to 3 years that you can't possibly do at any other point in your life, and you will just go to your grave regretting it if you don't do it right now? Live your life. Love your girlfriend. Marry her. Have kids. Claim some time to do the things that you want to do, and don't be such a selfish asshole.
And we're going to leave it there. Quick program note, the Savage Love Cast presents Dan Savage and psychotherapist and best-selling author Esther Perel October 12th at the Egyptian Theater in Seattle and October 13th at the Orpheum Theater in Vancouver, British Columbia. Esther and I will be answering your questions live. Esther will be signing copies of her new book, State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity. And of course, we will be talking at length about her new book and about her work. Go to www.savagelovecast.com for more info and to get tickets to both shows. Again, October 12th at the Egyptian in Seattle, October 13th in Vancouver, British Columbia. All right, 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Love Cast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. This is your last chance to get a film in for Hump 2017. The deadline for submissions for this year's Hump is Friday, September 15th at 3 p.m. You've got a few days. We've had entries in past years that were made the night before the deadline. So it's not too late to bust out your film for Hump. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit for all the information you need about making and submitting a film. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Amy Miller on Twitter at Amy Miller. The Savage Love Cast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth. And Nancy, we'll all be back at you next week with another installment on the Savage Love Cast. Thanks for having me.